All right, our next presentation is by Dr. Laura Wendling. Dr. Wendling is a senior lecturer in the Department of Soil and Environmental Science at the University of Queensland. And her presentation is Effective Attenuation of Nutrients in Mixed Wastewaters Using Mineral-Based Waste Materials as Reactive Substrate in Constructed Wetlands.
Thank you. Good morning. Hope you'll all forgive me if I'm a bit dopey. I'm coping with the 15-hour time difference. So, I'm going to talk today about some work that I did when I was a scientist with CSIRO. So this is work done in China and in Australia, and it feeds into some work that's published in a poster, so I'm going to give a plug to the poster also in the wetlands poster session. Poyang Lake is in east central China, and it's the largest freshwater lake in China, although it receives far less attention than Lake Tai, or Taihu, which is much closer to an urban center and equally contaminated. This is a very poor province. It's predominantly agricultural. There's about 44 million people that rely on water from Lake Poyang for their livelihood. It's a very large watershed, more than 160,000 square kilometers. And the lake level varies by 13 meters annually. I suspect this is going to change because the provincial government has received funding to put in a big dam, and they want to maintain the water level year-round. But at present, it's a really variable system, and it's quite eutrophic. It varies from being eutrophic to hypereutrophic. So we were asked to look at using wetlands or engineered wetlands as a way to treat some of the runoff from agricultural fields and effluent from villages, so including domestic wastewater as well, as an alternative to a conventional wastewater treatment system. So this is predominantly intended for areas where conventional wastewater treatment is either not feasible due to lack of infrastructure, lack of trained individuals to operate wastewater treatment plants, or basically just very remote areas. We wanted to put in hybrid constructed treatment wetlands, so a design that's kind of tried and true and is used in a lot of smaller villages around the world, starting with a free water surface wetland to remove our particulates and mineralize influent nitrogen. We had intermittently saturated vertical flow wetlands, so they were each saturated for 12 hours, had a solar-operated switch, and it flowed into a horizontal flow subsurface wetland that was saturated all the time, and the idea was that we would take all of our nitrogen, mineralize it, undergo nitrification, finally denitrification, and the part where I find really exciting is we're using these waste materials or residues from various industries in Jiangsu province to enhance phosphorus attenuation. Because it's a very poor province, there's not a lot of money to put into treating water. And at present, there's a lot of water that's entering the lake that's not treated at all. And it's resulted in some fairly subpar aquatic conditions. So we started our study by sourcing a whole host of industrial and mining residues, so mineral-based residues that had the capacity to attenuate phosphorus, and we did a lot of geochemical, mineralogical, and ecotoxicological characterization, and radiochemistry as well. And this is my plug for the poster in a later session. If you check out poster number 1314 on Wednesday afternoon, you can see the whole sequence of all the testing, material testing and characterization and ecotox testing that we did prior to our pilot scale field structure. About 80% of the wetland was comprised of locally sourced sand and pebbles so that we had good hydraulic conductivity. We used a titanium mineral processing residue, which was an intimate mixture of ferry hydrite and gypsum. That comprised about 10% of our reactive substrate. I used 3% of a blast furnace slag and 3% steel slag, and the balance was made up of wood chips. Ideally, we would like to have used some sort of waste, lignocellulosic waste material, so, you know, tree branches, rubbish, wood, just to provide a slowly decomposable carbon for microbial activity. I'm not actually sure where these wood chips came from, and they may have been treated with fertilizer. There are a few things that were lost in translation during the construction and deployment. You'll note that the pH of our steel slag and blast furnace slag is very high. The electrical conductivity of the steel slag in particular was very high. So we had to take a pretty close look at the pH and EC of our system. You can see we were a little bit concerned about naturally occurring radioactive materials, so we wanted to check our radiochemistry, and all of these materials had an effective annual dose less than the 1 millisievert per year dose recommended. Let's see, in our lab trials, we had between 80 and more than 90% phosphorus removal. Obviously, it was not that good in the field, but it was still all right. So just to give you a little bit of an idea, I'd like to preface this by saying we had picked out a beautiful site on a nice slope. We wanted to put in a header tank and install our wetland modules into the landscape, and the manager of the field site decided that he would rather put in a water feature. So we gave him our engineered diagrams and came back a month later, and we had concrete tanks. But that's all right. We can work with this. We collected water from the Zilong River, which receives effluent from a number of different industries in a small city. It also gets a lot of human waste. The city has a wastewater treatment plant that is meant to treat waste for about 100,000 individuals, and the population is currently approaching 1 million. So there's a lot of untreated effluent black water that's entering the Zilong River. There's direct domestic gray water from a village that's right nearby, and quite a bit of runoff from agricultural fields. There's also a tannery, a small-scale hog confinement, and a massive poultry production facility right there. So because we like a challenge, we decided we would collect this water. And it wasn't as nasty as you might think. It was actually pretty good. All right, so we started with a header tank with our water, which we collected every 3 days to replenish and make sure that we were getting good, yucky water. We had a free surface water wetland, so there's very little interaction between the influent water and the media in this free surface water wetland, but we planted it with water hyacinth. And my colleagues assured me that this was a native plant in China and was not a noxious invasive species, but I'm not sure about that. We had vertical flow, the two vertical flow wetlands. Each was intermittently saturated for 12 hours, so we'd saturate for 12 hours and then switch to the other module and let it drain, so that was to ensure we had adequate oxygenation. Both of those drained into a single horizontal subsurface flow wetland where we were looking for saturated conditions all the time. We wanted to see nitrification, and then into a storage tank. As you can see, we've planted Phragmites, but they're very, very small here, and I think that we would have seen better results after a longer time period when we had some better growth. Yeah, so this is what it looked like. Again, not exactly what we'd envisioned when we started out with, but we did have each of the modules as we had intended in our hybrid structure. Colors are a little light. The effluent pH, again, was a potential concern because of the alkalinity of some of the materials used in our reactive media. And you can see that our influent water was right around pH 7, and passage through the free water surface wetland, so where there's very little interaction between the water and the actual substrate, didn't change the pH much. As soon as we had the water going through a subsurface flow, vertical flow wetland, our pH went up to between 9.5 and 10, although it was starting to stabilize. And in our final module, it goes through the horizontal flow wetland, and the pH remained between about 8.5 and 9. This was our initial deployment, and we had intended to have at least 2 years of data, but one of our collaborators had a baby and no longer wanted to collect water samples. We think that we had seen stabilization after the first 60 days, so we expect that the water quality would have been adequate for the long term. Also, the guideline limit here that we're specifying is pH 9, and that's applicable to ANZEC water quality guidelines for Australia and New Zealand. The water quality guidelines in Jiangsu province stipulated that we could have water up to pH 9.5, so it would have been okay. Similarly here, I've specified what the water quality guidelines are for 95% species protection in Australia or New Zealand because they're far more stringent than the locally applicable guidelines. If we start by looking at nitrate nitrogen as a function of time, you can see that our influence spiked at about 3.5 milligrams per liter, which really wasn't as high as I thought it might be. But we saw fairly good nitrate removal. Our nitrite remained below the toxic level. Ammonium was starting to increase a bit toward the end of our trial, but seemed to be removed fairly effectively following passage through all of the hybrid wetland. And our phosphate was almost entirely removed. So our reactive media was successful at attenuating phosphorus. We were less successful at nitrogen attenuation than we had hoped, but again, I think that this would come with time if a little bit more maturity of our plants. All right, so we also looked at hardness. Hardness is going to be really important because the hardness and the proportion of the hardened alkalinity that is due to carbonate hardness affects the trigger values or toxicity levels for various trace elements that were present intermittently in the influent water. We did not see any detectable trace elements in our effluent. So trace metals and metalloids. For whatever reason, it was spectacularly successful at removing metals and metalloids, but it's something we'd want to keep an eye on in the future. Our dissolved oxygen was quite low, which means that we would either need to mix this effluent water with another water source that had much higher dissolved oxygen, or somehow re-aerate. And again, our chemical oxygen demand was less than desirable. Overall, we saw about 55% attenuation of our total inorganic nitrogen. The very effective phosphorus attenuation, we removed about 80%. So it was at the lower end of what we saw in a controlled environment, but we deemed that fairly acceptable. The effluent pH was less than 9, and very low concentrations of dissolved metals and metalloids in our effluent. Obviously, additional longer-term monitoring is necessary. So what we would need to see is the performance of these types of wetlands under varying climatic conditions and try to determine what an optimal hydraulic retention time is. In this particular system, we wanted to get away from nitrogen limitation and towards a zone of phosphorus limitation. So using a modified Redfield ratio, we just sort of did a quick calculation of where we were. And you can see we didn't really change very much. The influent water and the water that came out at the very far end were all very similar in terms of the nutrient limitation, but it showed that we weren't creating an environment that would be hostile. So that's all I've got.